This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for coming by the show. We're always glad to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about an issue about careers, talking about how do you put your best foot forward? And you know, when you're talking to a recruiter and you're talking to a talent acquisition manager, which is kind of the new lingo now for people who are hiring people for different companies, defense contractors, sometimes agencies, you know, what do they see? What are they looking for? What are some of the things that make the best candidate stand out when it comes to their resume, when it comes to interviews, when it comes to getting that job? Today, we're talking to Mike Bruni. He's a talent acquisition manager, a great guy. I've seen him out speaking to a number of different people and has a lot of advice. And I wanted to bring him on Federal News Radio to give that advice out to people who need it in terms of getting, you know, into certain jobs, what talent acquisition managers and recruiters see from the standpoint of that resume when it comes into the employer, and then also when a recruiter actually has a chance to sit down with somebody and interview them, whether it be on the phone or whether it be in person. Mike, welcome to Fed Access.
Thank you, Derek. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, you know, you've been doing this for a long time, Mike. And in terms of, and let's talk about the job market first. What are you seeing right now? And of course, 2013 was a tough market. We saw a lot of changes with the, you know, with budgets cut down and everything else. Are we seeing that both government and contractors, government contractors, is hiring back up now? Has it stabilized, or has is hiring down? And what are we seeing for the future?
Great. Thanks, Derek. Great question. I know that's the number one question on most folks' mind today is, you know, where are we in this industry? And, you know, it's broken down by industry. So I will speak specifically about the defense and government contracting industry. And I'm sad to say that it certainly has not hit the point yet where it's on an upward trend. I still think the jury's out of where we're going at this particular time. There's still a lot of uncertainty in the marketplace. A lot of it comes from the lack of government contract awards. There's certainly quite a bit in the pipeline here within our within our industry. But so far, projections are still uncertain, which is, of course, you know, continuing to make our industry unstable at this time as far as what's the forecast for later this year. We do have a government budget. However, that really hasn't trickled down into industry. So right now, there's still a lot of uncertainty. There hasn't been much consistency. And I'm sorry to say that at least for this particular government fiscal year, I don't anticipate any sharp increases in the market here anytime soon. So it's still a challenging market. It's competitive,
yeah,
but still a challenging market.
You know, with that and with that news, which is kind of sobering to a lot of people, and especially, you know, you've got a situation where you've got a number of people who have clearances, and some people, you know, I mean, of course, as we go up the clearance chain, there's a small number of people have the top clearances, the top secret, SCI, full poly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then you have a number of people have secret. And it used to be a time period where clearances, no matter if you had a secret or all the way to the top, a clearance was a good, was something that was make you competitive. But it seems as if with the market the way it is right now, that clearance, you know, unless you have the super, super secret clearance, that clearance is no longer the competitive edge that you can have. Is that true?
Correct. And I think it even goes a little deeper than that. I think, you know, there was a time, I think a few years back, that having a particular type of clearance did open quite a few doors for you and opened more doors than the average candidate. However, today it really breaks down to the expertise with that particular clearance. So folks come coming to us with a particular level of clearance that was, you know, in high demand years ago, just having the clearance doesn't necessarily give you anything, whether it be compensation or more opportunities. It's very, very specific. It's very targeted. There are certainly hot skill sets in some areas. But aside from that, again, very competitive. So, no, it's not the case anymore. We're just getting by with a particular level of clearance is going to open more doors than it did before.
You know, you just mentioned the expertise. I want to kind of run with that, Mike. And when you talk about expertise, so you're looking for somebody who's either coming in with a certain skill set, a certain sort of kind of certification, or, you know, whether it be the cyber or whether it be, you know, whatever the case is, engineering or software development, you're looking for particular skill sets rather than just somebody who says, hey, you've got a clearance and I'm going to fill some seats because you have a clearance. You're looking for that specified thing, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're hitting it on the head, Derek. And a couple of those areas of expertise that you mentioned, in particular, engineering, software development, obviously cyber and security, are always the skill sets and the types of expertise that are always in high demand, regardless of market. And we're seeing a shortage of those skill sets, particularly in this environment, in this particular marketplace here in the greater D.C. metro area. So they tend to be always in high demand. It's still extremely competitive, and I can tell you that some areas of the engineering community, there's certainly the demand outweighs the supply. So that is still a competitive market. Compensation offered in those areas tends to be more competitive than, say, other areas of expertise. So it really boils down to the specific type skill set, specific type of opportunity.
You know, Mike, when we talk about it, it seems as if, you know, when we look at kind of these, and I know you speak on this a lot, STEM careers, you know, the science, technology, engineering, math, those are the careers in high demand. Is that more in high demand than maybe what other things? Is that true?
That is true. And I think that's where you're seeing industry, other sectors, you know, to the private industry within the government contracting community, as well as other industries, investing a lot of resources and partnerships with the STEM community. We're really trying to organically grow the workforce, not only here in the area, but across the country, particularly in science, technology, engineering, and math. And it's, you know, we're starting to drill down even into the high school ranks to try to identify promising talent that we ultimately can connect and groom with over the course of the next couple of years.
Wow.
So there are strategies now that are actually, you know, with the STEM programs that a lot of companies in the industry have, we're actually drilling down even to the high school levels to look for those promising candidates that ultimately we can recruit when their time comes.
It kind of always reminds me almost like the NBA, NFL, you know, where you start looking at high schoolers ahead of time, that promising student, which I think is a great thing. I mean, you know, which is, you know, you're starting to look at somebody who has talent and somebody who's already showing a vested interest in these areas. And with that grooming, I mean, are companies kind of saying, listen, you know, because this, you know, helps kind of parents begin thinking about helping careers for their children. Are they starting to say, hey, listen, you've got some talent. We see something in you. We'll help you with your degree? Or, I mean, what are companies doing these days?
There are those types of programs out there. And more so than that, there are certainly programs that will try to incentivize promising young folks to continue to move into that particular sector. Just the awareness alone, Derek, the awareness that these types of, you know, positions and these types of opportunities are available. You know, for me, coming from more of a blue collar background, you know, when I was in high school, I really didn't wasn't aware of the types of engineering opportunities that existed then and even now. So I think just having that awareness and really educating folks on the possibilities and the opportunities and what you need to do really to navigate while you're going to school, in high school, in college, what the consequences are of decisions that you make even now could have for you in the future. So just having the awareness and giving folks the opportunity to start thinking about, you know, 10, 15 years down the road, what's going to be there. And the forecast for those types of skill sets, we don't see anything even in the out years of this type of expertise, you know, saturating the market. So certainly these are very promising skill areas and career tracks.
It for a person who, and because you deal with kind of defense contracting, you deal with hiring people who have clearances, but for that person who is very promising, so to say, that cyber expert or maybe has a unique language or somebody who has that kind of unique something, is the market at a place where a company who says, listen, you don't have a clearance, but you've got this unique skill set, we will clear you? Or is the defense market now completely that you've got to have a clearance in terms of defense contract, you've got to have a clearance in order to, you know, to for us to talk to you?
Certainly. I think, again, it comes down to specific skill sets that are in high demand. Certain areas of software development are always in high demand, and you may see some exceptions where a particular program that a prime contractor has in the industry will have the ability to possibly sponsor someone for a particular clearance. However, a lot of that comes down to budget and funding, and we're not really seeing dollars and funding go towards the sponsorship. We have saturated the market over the last 10 to 12 years with clearances, so there are a number of folks. I think Washington Post actually did a story, I think a little over a year ago, specifically about this. So some areas were saturated with cleared folks. Others, are still in high demand. But to answer your question directly, we are not seeing that in volume. It's very specific. It's very onesie-twosie where we have an individual with a very particular set of skills where we do have the exception where we can sponsor them for a clearance.
We're talking to Mike Broney. He is a talent acquisition manager in the defense community. Mike is an expert, and he's been around, and he talks to a number of different people, whether it be at the Pentagon, whether it be at county employment offices. He's spoken for me at some different places. Mike talks to a lot of different people about this job market, about what happens when you talk to a recruiter, how to present yourself, talk to people about how to make yourself a person who is going to get that job, going to win that job. We're going to get some of Mike's tips that he sees as a recruiter as we continue to go forward. We're talking about how to basically get this job and understanding the current job market when it comes to the defense community, when it comes to defense contracting and other areas. Talking to Mike Broney. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're talking about careers today. We're talking about the perspective of the recruiter. What does a recruiter see when they see a certain candidate? What are they looking for? What grabs their attention, whether it be the resume, in the interview, a phone interview, in-person interview? What is going to make the difference between you getting the job and you not getting the job? This market is probably one of the most competitive that we've seen out there. And so we're trying to give some tips to give some people a way to get success. We're talking to Mike Broney. He's a talent acquisition manager. And Mike, that's kind of the fancy name for a senior level, high-level recruiter, right?
That's correct. That's the current catchy name in the industry.
That's the new name, the talent acquisition manager, and he's an expert on this thing, been doing this for a long time and brings a number of years of experience in looking for and finding the right candidate. Mike, would you say, you kind of hit on it before, would you say that this is probably one of the most competitive job markets that you have seen in a long time?
No question. I think there's a couple forces at work today. Obviously, the lagging economy here locally within the defense industry. You know, we're coming off a 10-12 year high in the industry. Companies over the course of that time have literally tripled or quadrupled in size. So it's very sobering. It's a shock to still many people in this industry that were, riding that wave just 5-6 years ago, whereas today we have really declined as an industry, and that's just due to, current market conditions. Obviously, it peaks and valleys, the economy peaks and valleys. And, over the 17 years that I've been in this industry, Derek, I have to say that particularly here in this particular geographic location, there is no question that today it's the most competitive environment.
Wow. With that, Mike, you and a lot of people, and take us into the kind of the understanding of a company in terms of recruitment. Because a lot of people think, hey, listen, I see a company, and this is all over the defense market and all over a lot of different companies. I see a company, they've got 1,800 job postings out, right? And so there's got to be a job here for me. And I've applied for 100 jobs, and I haven't heard any anything from any of these jobs? I mean, you know, take us into how that works. I mean, when an employer puts out all of these job postings or vacancy announcements or things like that, are they real? Are they, you know, are they just kind of like we're possibly because we're, you know, working on a contract and we may need to hire for this? I mean, what is that? What are people looking at in terms of the job seeker and what is the employer doing?
Absolutely. And it's a question we always get, Derek. And really, it's the nature of the government contracting industry. By its nature, it's constantly competitive. In other words, our companies in the industry are constantly competing for government contracts. Mm. So in order to do that, as part of that process, particularly in the services area of government contracting, where services is basically you are selling the expertise of the individuals that work for you. Mm-hmm. So because you have such a large pipeline, because the possible need and requirement for expertise, a certain percentage of our postings in the industry, as companies in this industry, a certain percentage are always going to be contingent upon some type of contract award. We have ramp-up times. We have to be prepared because in the event of an award, in many cases, there is a very quick turnaround to staff up that particular program. So it is not uncommon today to see go to a particular company's website and that 60 to 70% of those job postings are still contingent upon a contract award, funding, or whatever the case may be. So to the average career seeker or job seeker, it can be very, very misleading mm-hmm. because you look at a company website and you see 2,000 job postings, yet maybe 10 to 15 to 20% of those particular jobs are actively funded and are ready to go. So it can be very misleading. I see a lot of frustration out there in the market, completely understand, but I think understanding that piece of our industry allows a little bit more closure for the person that's actually pursuing those opportunities.
And for a job seeker, would they say, well, is it worth me putting my application in? You know, and also for a job seeker, Mike, you know, when you're looking at it from the perspective of an employer and you see an applicant who's applied to maybe 100 positions with your company, you know, is that a turnoff for you? Is that something that says, hey, listen, this person, what are you seeing it from the perspective of kind of the hiring side, even when you do have these openings that may not be funded, that may get funded soon? Do you want people to keep on applying or what?
Well, I think it's a great question, Derek, and I'm glad you asked that because I really, really do want to answer this because it comes up on a daily basis as I am interacting with candidates. Another aspect of the government contracting industry, which really separates us from other market sectors, whether, you know, the commercial market, the retail industry, the healthcare industry. Defense contracting, when we post the job, you will always see a minimum amount of requirements. For folks that are reviewing or are going to apply for those particular positions, they need to convey and articulate in their resume or their application that they at least meet and or exceed those minimum requirements. Because keep in mind that the requirements that we advertise, we are contractually required in most cases to provide an expert or a qualified individual for that position to go on to our program. So I think a lot of that gets lost, and what you have is you have a number of folks that tend to apply to a number of opportunities without actually really drilling into those minimum requirements. Before you know it, you have an applicant that is applying to 50-some positions and are extremely frustrated because they do not hear a response. With some of the screening technologies and some of the applicant tracking systems that we have today, some of these automatically will screen applicants out, and aside from an automated generated email that they may receive, there isn't any human contact. In addition to that, we have tons of volume. So for the average job posting, you usually have a recruiter that's managing anywhere from 40 to 50 job openings at any given time, and these recruiters may be taking on, you know, 200, 300 applicants applying on a daily basis. So when you start to add all of that up and you do the math, with time allotted, I mean, your average recruiter is probably working, you know, anywhere from 40 to 50 hours a week. When you do the math on that, you come to find out that it is almost impossible to review every single resume that comes through a website.
Right.
So between volume and we're inundated and overwhelmed by the number of applicants. And unfortunately, as statistics do back this up, the majority of those applicants do not meet those minimum requirements. So it's sort of it's a challenge. It's a challenge for the employer, and it's even a larger challenge for the employee.
So what you're saying, Mike, is that out of maybe, and I'm assuming that you probably are getting hundreds to thousands of applicants, you know, and the screening technology is kind of knocking out a lot of those people right then and there. So we're just getting job seekers who are kind of taking this shotgun approach and just kind of applying to almost anything. Like they see it, they're really not reading the job requirements. They're not really reading the qualifications. Maybe they're about 50% qualified, but you need somebody who's at 95 to 100% qualified. So if you're at 50, you're not even being even looked at or even deemed qualified in any kind of way.
That's correct. And I know that's a hard pill for a lot of folks to swallow.
Right.
And keep in mind that a lot of people can do the jobs that they apply to.
Right.
Unfortunately, because we are contractually obligated to provide a candidate that meets and or exceeds those minimum requirements. So, for instance, if I have a 25-year experienced individual with no bachelor's degree, and I have a hard requirement in my position that requires a bachelor's degree and 15 years of experience, because that particular candidate does not possess that degree, I may not be able to bring that individual on because they do not meet the minimum requirements. Now, sometimes there is experience equivalencies, and if there are, they are specified in those minimum requirements.
Right.
But it can be that tight of a requirement. And it's a shame. It really is a shame because that individual is probably more than qualified and can do this work.
Right.
But because that's what my minimum requirements are, unfortunately, we have to pass on that individual.
Wow. Because, you know, you do get a lot of people saying, listen, I meet everything. I just missed this one piece. And you're saying, like, you know, that one piece may be a hard requirement for the government contractor or whoever, and we can't get around that. Is that true? I mean,
it can be. I mean, there are certain cases where you can request waivers, but they're very few. They're very few and far between.
Wow. You know, with all of that, and I want to come back and we got to take a quick break. I want to come back and kind of talk about how does a person really, really present themselves. So if they are qualified, I mean, you know, we're getting to the point where say, listen, you need to make sure you're qualified. So don't waste time applying for things you're not truly qualified for. If you don't meet all the minimum qualifications, don't waste time doing that. But then you do have a saturation of a lot of people who are qualified. And then they're saying, I'm 100% qualified. I'm still not getting hits. I want to talk about that next, Mike, because I'm sure you're getting a lot of that as well. And it may be some things that they're missing in their resume or how they present themselves or how do they get past that black hole. We're talking to Mike Bruni. He's a talent acquisition manager in the defense community. He's been in the industry for 17 years, hiring people, assessing people, trying to find the right fit for a company in terms of making sure that the person has the right skills and experience and education and qualifications to do the job. And it's going to be a good fit for both people, for the person as well as the company in doing work in the defense industry and other industries. We're talking about kind of careers, getting through that door and the recruiter perspective on Fed Access. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the recruiter's perspective. We're talking about careers. We're talking about what does a recruiter see when you have a candidate out there who's trying to apply for a job? What do they see that grabs their attention? What do they see that, you know, will get their interest and get their juices flowing in terms of the interview when they hear somebody on the phone interview or they have an in-person interview? What are the things that's going to help you win the job? From the recruiter's perspective, they see a number of different things in terms of, you know, how they have to go out and get the, you know, put these positions out, all the way to how they actually go and find the right people, which can sometimes be a very, very big task. We're talking to Mike Bruni. He's a talent acquisition manager in the defense community. He's worked in a defense community for a long time, has 17 years of recruiting experience, and talent acquisition manager is that kind of new title for that senior level recruiter who's going out there and trying to find the right kind of talent for a company. Mike, when we look at this and kind of that whole dynamic, we talked about the person who may be looking at various companies and may not unfortunately fit the right qualifications, but that's sometimes just something, you know, that's unfortunate nature of the beast right now. If you don't fit the qualifications, you shouldn't waste your time applying for things. You got to find what are the right positions to apply for that meet your qualifications. and possibly identify what the qualifications are and maybe seek those things out as much as possible, whether it be a degree or other skill sets or whatever you can get in order to make yourself more qualified. But let's speak on the qualified candidate, because then you have a number of people say, I'm 100% qualified. I've got the clearance. I've got this, but I'm still not getting hits. Why is that the case?
Yep. Again, another great question. And it starts with this. Career seekers, folks in transition right now, really need to diversify the way that they seek for opportunities. The key today is stepping out. You know, there are many qualified folks for each position that are out there. As we've discussed, you know, the majority of opportunities that are active, that are ready to go, are small in numbers. So it's an extremely competitive market where it is competitive. The difference between candidate A, candidate B, and candidate C is who steps out the most, who's made the best impression, who has the best chemistry with that potential employer. That's key. So how do you make a better impression? How does candidate A make a better impression than candidate B? And it starts way before applying. It starts way before the resume. Really, it starts with preparation. And I'll tell you, Derek, two of the areas that I focus on anytime I go out into the community and present is, number one, self-assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Every candidate out there needs to know what it is that they want to do and what they want to actively pursue. Number two, research. You have to research the market to see, number one, which organizations you'd like to work for, and where does your expertise fit in well with that organization. You want to make sure that you are appealing to the correct organization and to an organization that's going to value your set of expertise. So those two things have to be done up front, way before you submit a resume through my database or through my website or any time that you approach an employer and start conversation. It has to be done. So you have to set yourself up for success. What happens is we tend to get folks, as we have mentioned, that will peanut butter spread their resume 50 to 100 times into a company. All you're really doing is spamming the company's or organization's applicant tracking system. And yes, it does leave a negative impression on a recruiter when they do see someone's resume come across 50 to 100 times for 100 positions.
So people need to hear that, Mike. People need to hear that what kind of impression are you leaving, you know, on a recruiter? Because, I mean, if they keep on seeing your name, it's like, this guy, you know, this guy or gal is you know, they're not really, you know, paying attention. They're just sending stuff in at a random base. And they kind of almost, you'll see that person's name and you'll kind of get turned off and just kind of may not even look at them anymore, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the key to it is to be specific. Really get as detailed and specific as possible. Diversify your search. Just don't apply to jobs through a website. Get up close and personal. Network. Everybody's heard it before. Network, network, network.
Right.
That is networking through social media. That is networking through in-person. Finding organizations, professional associations, user groups. Really start taking part. You know, it's always said a job search is a full-time job, and trust me, it is. It's a full-time job with overtime. You are constantly on the job. It's like a salesperson. It's like a recruiter. You never really put the job down. So you really have to stay at it. You have to be persistent, but you have to make sure that you've done the research and that you've assessed yourself to make sure that the time that you're putting into it is used, you know, in the best way possible, because you can really get, you know, you can really sort of, you know, veer off and waste a lot of time and really do yourself a disservice. So the more focused you are, the more research that you've done, the better chance you will have at not just finding an opportunity, but the right opportunity.
Mike, let me ask this question, because a lot of people wonder about kind of career fairs, you know, and I want to dabble into networking a little bit more in a minute, social media. I want to talk about that in a few minutes. But, you know, when you hear about career fairs and you see, you know, whatever organization has a career fair, Clearance Jobs, Tech Expo USA, whoever the case is. But when people... Do you find that career fairs are valuable for people? I mean, you know, a lot of people say, I'm in a line with 100 people. You know, I'm how am I going to really honestly get myself noticed with all these people? There's one or two recruiters. You know, these guys are tired. Is it worth to do it? And if you do go to the career fair, how do you present yourself in order to make sure you stand out amongst the hundreds of other people who you're in line waiting to see that one recruiter?
Absolutely. Great question. And, you know, we get a lot of feedback. As a staffing professional, you tend to get a lot of feedback from candidates and it's usually negative feedback regarding job fairs. I think where the issue lies here is, and to answer your question directly, the short answer is, yes, I do feel that they are worth it. But I think what we need to do is folks that are planning on, candidates that are planning on going to a job fair need to set their expectations. I think a lot of people will walk into a career fair with the hopes and the expectations that they are going to walk out of there with an offer for employment.
Mm-hmm.
You have probably under 1% chance of that happening.
Hmm.
Maybe in a career invitational, not a public or clear job fair. These are usually marketing type events for that company. Certainly we're there to try to find talent. The fact is you usually have two or three recruiters showing up due to certain regulations that we have to follow with the way that the online applicant tracking, the applicant process. So we have regulations that we need to follow. So if you're the candidate that's going up to an employer and the employer is giving you a business card and directing you to their website, there are reasons behind that. It's not because the recruiter
it's just kind of blowing you off.
Yes, there are some regulations and things that we have to abide by as
sure.
a government contractor. But for the most part, it's setting expectations. And really, a candidate that is going to attend a job fair should have the expectations of, I'm going to go and meet representatives from a certain number of organizations that I am interested in. I want to break the ice, begin a rapport, okay, and really try to make contacts and inroads into those organizations. It goes back to the research and what it is that you want to do. Now, to answer your question of how to better prepare, how do you stand out from all of the other folks when you have 20 people lined up to speak with an individual or at that company, keep in mind you have to be cognizant of the time that the person is going to take into speaking with you. And I've done it many times. I've sat at job fairs, and I can tell you that folks that come up with their 20 to 30 second elevator speech that are well groomed, dressed professionally, especially for our industry, okay, are dressed professionally. They are cognizant of my time. They know that they're not going to dominate my time. They know that there's a long line behind me and that they've done the research. They may have applied for a particular job on my website, and they have they bring a hard copy resume tailored to that particular opportunity. They've specified the ID number for that opportunity, and they've asked me to please consider them for that. And if I am not the point of contact, we are a large company, so I might not, as a recruiter, I might not be the recruiter assigned to that particular position, but ask them if they could pass my information to the proper point of contact. That is the difference between actually getting consideration and getting a return on that investment of going to that job fair, as opposed to just getting the resume put in a pile that ultimately is scanned in an applicant tracking system.
We're talking to Mike Bruni. He is a talent acquisition manager in the defense community, and I hope people are listening to this valuable knowledge that he is relaying to us right now in terms of, this job search. This is a competitive market, but Mike is speaking from the eyes of the recruiter in terms of how do you present yourself. And Mike, you said so many different things that we're going to cover on the next, we got a little bit of time, but I want to get to a couple of things that you talked about in terms of people presenting themselves, because it seems as if a lot of people are hurting themselves with their presentation, and a lot of people are doing it themselves a disservice by not networking. And so there's a lot of different things we want to talk about. He is talking about how do you make yourself competitive in terms of the eyes of the recruiter when you're in this market. And this is information not only for defense market, but it's for all markets when you're trying to get out there and get that job. We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we are talking about careers. We are talking about things from the eyes of the recruiter, the perspective of the recruiter. What are they seeing out there in terms of, there's this competitive market out there right now in terms of fewer jobs, especially in the defense market, especially in the government contracting market, fewer jobs. They're looking for more specified talent. And we're talking about how to make yourself competitive in this market. If you're a job seeker and you're working around this market, how do you make your resume more competitive? How do you make your presentation more competitive in order for you to win the job? We're talking to Mike Bruni. He's a talent acquisition manager in the defense community, working for one of the major companies out there. But he has 17 years of experience in doing this work. So he's seen it. He's been there, done that. And he can tell you, how to make that impression in order to help you win this job. Mike, we were talking about career fairs and talking about networking and talking about how do you present represent yourself. And you mentioned something really, really important I think people need to hear. You know, people think that they can walk in, and it's about managing expectation and setting expectations. People think they can walk into a career fair or maybe meet somebody one time and give their resume to that recruiter, and then they should get a call back. You know, and you mentioned something about kind of building a rapport or building a relationship with somebody in terms of, you know, it's not just one time, but it's following up. It's trying to make sure you stay in touch. How important is that?
Extremely important, Dark, and I think you're just hitting upon the key to success for ultimately a job seeker. Keep in mind that in an economy that we are in, where there tends to be, you know, a high volume of qualified job seekers and a low volume of opportunity, employers naturally become even more picky, more selective in their hiring process. Keep in mind that when a company makes a decision to hire, there's a financial investment in that as well. So if someone is to walk out our door within, you know, 60 to 90 days, the company suffers and takes a real financial hit to that. So we're more selective. Obviously, there are more qualified candidates to choose from, okay? So, yes, so the question becomes, why am I going to select candidate A, again, over candidate B? And the fact is, I'm going to probably, as an employer, I'm more likely to select the candidate that I have a better comfort level with, that I have an established relationship with, and have a better rapport with. As a recruiter, I'm more likely to contact the individual or to help influence that hiring decision with that particular hiring manager because I may know a particular candidate better than another. So it's again, it's networking. It's a better reference. So yes, it goes back really to networking. Networking to me is building relationships, right, building rapport, having that connection, having that go-to person, again, in the organizations, in the industry that you're actively pursuing as a candidate. Because once that rapport is developed, it may not be overnight, but over the course of time, you have an established contact, you have an established rapport with someone who is in a position to help get you through the door for that particular opportunity.
And people have to realize that just because you don't get the job, this particular job, that you guys are always getting new opportunities. You're always bidding. So it may not be this one position, but if you build this rapport with the recruiter, maybe you didn't get it this year, but then Mike calls you next year because we got something that's out there and I remembered you. How often does that happen, Mike?
That happens all the time. And, you know, I'll speak firsthand here. When an opportunity comes my way, one of my hiring managers, the first thing that comes to mind is, who do I know personally that can do this? Mm-hmm. And usually, because I know, you know, my areas of expertise that I recruit for, normally a couple of names are going to pop into my mind as potential prospects for that opportunity. You want to be able to have that impression on a recruiter. You want your name to pop into the mind of a recruiter when that particular opportunity becomes available. So that is the key behind it. Again, it's all about separating yourself from the other candidates. That is how you do it. Instead of investing so much time and peanut butter spreading your resume across job boards and company websites, focus more on the individual organizations that you want to be that you want to pursue, as well as the individuals inside those organizations, again, who can help open that door.
You know, when we look at the dynamics of, you know, people who are coming to the table with a lot of skill sets and may say, listen, I'm 120% qualified. When you get to that point of maybe several different high level candidates who have all the qualifications, answer this question, Mike. How much is personality stand out for you? I mean, you know, we have a job market sometimes. I mean, sometimes people's personality and how they come off is sometimes a little bit standoffish or off-putting. You know, how much is that personality going to make a difference for you? And in terms of kind of pushing somebody forward, and when you do get that right candidate, what's the next step as a recruiter? I mean, you know, as a talent acquisition manager, are you now taking them to the people and saying, listen, you know, I've got a good candidate? But your reputation is on the line as well, because the consequences of a bad hire can also hurt the recruiter, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to address your first question there, typically, in a typical interview, particularly, and I think this goes across industries, normally it's 80-20. 80% of the time, we are making selections based on chemistry, based on soft skills, which includes the personality. Keep in mind that usually you're not going to be invited in for an interview unless you meet my minimum requirements. That's why I always love to say, if you are invited in for a personal interview, it is your job to lose, because that's your opportunity to connect with the person that ultimately you might work for individually, okay? So it's certainly, we're looking at who is going to fit into the team. Again, we're pretty convinced, due to some pre-screen, based on a resume, based on a phone interview, we have a good idea that you meet and or exceed my requirements for the position. Now it's your turn to come in, and it's actually to demonstrate to me that you're the right fit, and a lot of that has to be, how am I going to interact with you? Again, it's that chemistry. So, yes, 80% of the time, we are focused on who's the best fit. Keep in mind that as a government contractor, we spend a lot of time, most of our work is in the services industry, which means the people that work for us are going to interact frequently with our customers. So keep in mind, there is even a heavier focus in the services side of the house to find the right person who we can trust, and trust with our company and their reputation,
right,
on site at a customer facility, interacting with our individual customer. So a lot of that is taken. So for candidates out there listening, you have to put a lot of emphasis in an interview based on how you respond to questions, how you interact, as opposed to just focusing on qualifications.
Mike, we only got a few seconds, but I want you to touch on the resume real quick, and we'll have to bring you back to kind of talk about this more, because there's so much to cover. The resume, what are you looking for?
I will tell you, in a resume, a couple things, Derek, in the time we have. For those out there putting a resume together for our defense industry, number one, make it as easy as possible for the recruiter. Typically, a recruiter is only going to give you 6 to 12 seconds of eye time onto your resume. Make it short, make it pointed, make it detailed. Make sure that the key words for the opportunity that you're pursuing are conveyed and that they are articulated well, to make sure that that individual, in a short period of time, can really make the estimation that you meet those minimum requirements and deserve a contact. Keep in mind, a resume is only a document. It's a marketing document to get you contact, or to be contacted by a potential employer. If there's anything you can take from a resume conversation, know your audience. Know the audience. So when the candidate is putting together a resume, know the audience that you are trying to appeal to, and write your resume to that particular audience, specifically to that type of opportunity.
You know, that targeting is so important, and people need to hear that more and more. You cannot, if what I'm hearing, Mike, you cannot be generic. Is that right?
Absolutely. Being a generalist today will usually get you disposition very quickly from consideration for a position. You have to stand out. It goes back to that volume. You have to stand out. You have, and in order to stand out, you need to be very targeted, very specific, very detailed.
Thank you so much, Mike. We're going to have to definitely have you come back, because there's so much information that people need to hear. And with this competitive job market right now, everybody needs any kind of advice that's going to give them that edge to you know, get that opportunity to get out there to improve themselves. And you've got a lot of wealth to spread. So thank you so much, Mike, for coming on Fed Access.
Derek, thank you for the opportunity. It's been my pleasure.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.